This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, analysis of the tone, substance, and outcome of the NATO summit, and a preview of the Trump-Putin meeting in Helsinki. Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. The NATO meeting began on a confrontational note, with U.S. President Donald Trump railing against NATO members who, in his view, do not do enough to shoulder their respective financial burdens. This, even though in 2014, NATO countries pledged to spend 2% of their GDP on defense by 2024. However, the meeting, which many leaders feared could end the way the G7 summit ended in Canada, with Mr. Trump initially refusing to sign the communique and departing early, ended in a victory of sorts. Mr. Trump seemed mollified by progress made. National security analysts assert that the NATO alliance is as essential today as it was when it was created over 70 years ago. America's alliances are an asset that are the envy of Russia and China, which continue to threaten the liberal world order. The need for collective security remains. Russia is not the Soviet Union, but as a declining power, it feels threatened. Moscow has modernized its forces and is prepared to deploy them. The need to anchor European democracy remains as well, especially as authoritarianism creeps up in Poland and Hungary. Both the European Union and NATO can help limit its advance, analysts say. Well, with us to discuss the fallout from the NATO summit and to preview the Trump-Putin meeting in Helsinki are two distinguished national security analysts. Jeffrey Rathke is Senior Fellow and Deputy Director of the Europe Program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, and that's a think tank here in Washington. Previously, Jeffrey served in numerous senior posts at the U.S. Department of State. And Max Bergman, he's Senior Fellow at the Center for American Progress, another think tank based here in Washington. And Max also served in senior positions dealing with European security and U.S.-Russia relations at the State Department. And both gentlemen join me here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Thanks, Carol.
Well, Jeffrey Rathke, let me begin with you. Let's talk about the outcome of the summit, despite the initial drama that President Trump created with some contentious words claiming that NATO allies were not shouldering a fair share of the financial burden. It seems that at the end, he seemed more or less convinced that they were actually working toward the goal that they established in 2014, 2% of the GDP going to military and so forth. What is your takeaway from the meeting?
I think there are two main takeaways. The first one is that despite the rhetoric, there was agreement on a significant number of defense measures that the United States and its allies will take in Europe. This includes a strengthened defense posture, heightened military readiness on the part of NATO allies. It also includes new elements of the NATO command structure that should make it better able to respond to a conventional military threat. It includes things like NATO-EU cooperation, a new training mission for Iraqi security forces, steps regarding security in Afghanistan and support for the Afghan security forces, and overall increasing resources for defense. By the way, NATO decided to take in a new member, Macedonia, with their neighboring Greece, so that they can enter European institutions. So that's another step. All of these are important constructive measures that have a continuity with priorities that have been pursued by previous administrations. But then that has to be compared with the really remarkable penchant that the president has for picking fights with America's allies. There is an element of stage management here. This was not a spontaneous outburst. If you read some of the reporting surrounding this summit, it's quite clear that this was planned in advance. The president wanted to overturn the table, as one of his senior aides put it on background to the Washington Post. So that means we've got to think about what the effect of this is. Clearly, in a way, the president and his defenders see this as a negotiating strategy. This is a way of making Europeans more serious. But I think there's also a pernicious effect that we see already and that is going to continue, because it creates doubts about whether the United States values its alliances, whether the United States will stand by its allies in a crisis, and it erodes the support in the United States as well as overseas for the very idea of shared security across the Atlantic.
Turning to you, Max Bergman, for your take on the outcome of the summit, anything to add or subtract to what Jeffrey just said?
I agree with Jeffrey completely. You know, I think there were sort of two different summits here. There was the summit done by the professionals, by the military officials, focused on how to make the alliance function better, how do we deal with the threat from Russia. So I think what you see is, you know, the U.S. government continuing to function well with career professionals. But then you see sort of the other level, which is the summit tree at the senior level, the presidential level. And there, you know, essentially it was like a hurricane approaching Brussels. It was a category 5 mass destruction type event when Trump was coming. People were very nervous. Diplomats on all sides of the Atlantic were very nervous about what Trump would do, what Trump would say. And I think the summit started off very badly with attacking Germany in one of his first meetings and then continuing to attack very aggressively our U.S. European allies. But then the end of the summit, it sort of the hurricane left as like a category 3. It wasn't quite as devastating, I think, as people feared. We have to also look at, you know, NATO is an alliance built on shared commitment. It is essentially, if you're going to mess with that country, you're going to mess with us. And I don't think any European country can really have total faith that Donald Trump would be there for them in a crisis, in a contingency. And we're at a situation now with Russia. It's, you know, heading towards the end of the World Cup. And Russia has a tendency to invade other countries following major sporting events. It did so in Ukraine after the Sochi Olympics in 2014, did so after the Beijing Olympics in 2008. Now, I'm not saying it's going to instigate a security crisis necessarily with NATO, but if it did, I don't think any NATO country could really think that Donald Trump would be there for them. And that is the sort of pernicious impact of attacking our U.S. allies so aggressively.
Turning back to you, Jeffrey Rathke, about the discrepancy between perhaps Mr. Trump's rhetoric and the actions and commitment by the United States in the national security strategy. China and Russia are identified as major threats. The commitment to NATO is strong, and many European allies and NATO allies have an excellent relationship with the U.S. Department of Defense. So there's that discrepancy. So which one prevails? I think people are concerned about the words, the tone of Mr. Trump. And in that regard, Max brought up the fact that can the Europeans depend on the United States? And that brings us to critics of Mr. Trump's laser focus on monetary contributions alone perhaps is misplaced. And while, of course, striving toward this 2% goal is very important, it's very important that we all understand that NATO members contribute in so many other ways. And I think to Max's point about coming to the defense, that is, he invoked without saying it, Article 5, which commits each member state to consider an armed attack on another member state as an attack on them all. And we do recall that our NATO allies came to the defense of the United States on September 11, 2001. So again, to that point, what about putting in context, Jeffrey, the contributions that NATO members make beyond this bottom line?
There are two parts to this. First is that there is a legitimate issue about sharing the burden for transatlantic security across the alliance. And Donald Trump is no outlier in comparison to his predecessors as president in calling on Europeans to do more for our shared security. Democrats as well as Republicans have made this point. President Obama was also quite frustrated and famously talked about how he disliked free riders. It was pretty clear that he had at least some Europeans in mind when he said that. So there's a continuity in that issue for the United States. But what's different here, I think, is that President Trump has blown this out of all proportion compared to the other elements of the alliance relationship. The alliance is not just about burden sharing. Burden sharing is an important element, but it also depends on a shared strategic vision, shared strategic interests and values. And it also depends on political solidarity. And that's why this hyper focus on defense spending is so difficult now for NATO. There's also a different question, which is whether measuring the amount you spend in your defense budget is really the best way to gauge a country's contributions. If you look at NATO allies, there are some who spend less than 2% who are, in every other respect, more or less model allies. And then there are some who spend more than 2% who are not always part of the fight when it comes down to foreign military deployments or NATO operations. So there's also a question about whether that's the right way to measure things. We've just done a longer study at CSIS on this, but that's a question that also suffuses this debate within NATO. One thing I would add to this as well is what is missing from the NATO summit that we just had is, what is this all for? Why are we spending or aspiring to spend 2% of our GDP? For what purpose? Clearly, as Max said in his comments, it has a lot to do with the threat that comes from Russia. Russia has tried to alter borders in Europe by force, and it has done other aggressive actions that endanger the security of the United States and its allies. But Donald Trump has totally disconnected the strategic aspect of NATO and its reason for existing from the resource question. And that does not lead to a productive discussion, because for European publics, it looks to many like Donald Trump is just demanding more money. He's not saying we need to spend more money so we can better defend ourselves against Russia. He's just saying you need to spend more.
To you, Max, for a comment on that. And I guess it leads us to underscore NATO's significance today. And of course, we do know that President Trump, who often invokes the America First philosophy, does not hide his general disdain for multilateral institutions, organizations like the EU or NATO. He frequently criticizes them, some say perhaps to appeal to his domestic political base. Nonetheless, most national security analysts say that the United States gains enormously from our inclusion in NATO, and that the alliance is, in fact, a veritable two-way street. So just underscore that for us and remind us of the biggest threats to our collective security and democracy.
Trump is hitting on something that is not wrong, and that previous presidents have pushed, is that the Europeans are underinvesting in their defense capabilities. Part of this stems from the post-Cold War peace dividend, and then the financial crisis after 2008 prompted initially additional reductions. But what we've seen is actually since 2014, European countries have started to increase their defense spending. Why? Because they see a threat from Russia. They saw that Russia invaded a neighboring country. They now perceive there's a real threat. So Europe is starting to take defense more seriously. The problem with how Trump is approaching this is that it's a little bit like you're asking your child to do better in school and you're badgering them to do better in school. That makes sense. But if you then say you're going to disown your child if they don't go from a B to an A in school, that's disproportionate. It's such an overreaction that in some ways it's more likely to cause a disruption in your relationship with your child. And I think that's what we're on the verge of seeing here, is that it's backfiring. Angela Merkel and Germany need to spend more on defense. The German military is not in great shape. But if Merkel were to spend more money on defense or to push her government to increase defense spending, it looks like she's caving to Trump, who is so unpopular in Europe. And so what we have now, Trump has made himself so unpopular that there's now an incentive for European leaders to actually confront Trump, to actually stand up to him. And I was sort of relieved that we didn't have a real conflagration between European leaders and Trump where they could get political cachet back at home in Europe by standing up to him. One of the things that makes the United States different than previous sort of major world powers in history is the alliance structure. When you look at countries that are rising powers or great powers today, China and Russia, they have very weak alliances. They do have some core allies around the world, but when you think about the United States, you think of a United States that is connected to allies in Europe through NATO, one of the most powerful, important military alliances in the history of the world, then in Asia with Japan, South Korea, Australia, and a number of other treaty allies all around the world. These alliances are absolutely critical because what it means is that the United States doesn't just stand alone. It stands with other countries around the world. And that is critical. And that's critical to U.S. power. It's critical to, I think, the liberal global order, that we can figure out ways to solve global problems by working collectively, by working diplomatically. Our alliances have helped undergird U.S. influence around the world for the last 70 years since the end of World War II. And Trump's attacks on NATO and attacks on America's democratic allies go straight to the heart of American power. And so I think for those that have worked at the State Department, those that are interested in American foreign policy, it's really worrying the direction that he's going.
We'll have more in just a moment, but first you're listening to Encounter on The Voice of America. My guests are Jeffrey Rathke, Senior Fellow and Deputy Director of the Europe Program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, and Max Bergman. He's Senior Fellow at the Center for American Progress. And we're discussing the fallout from the NATO summit, and we will soon preview the meeting between U.S. President Donald Trump and Russian President Vladimir Putin in Helsinki on July 16th. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available for free download on iTunes. You can find the download by clicking on the podcast button at the bottom of our website, voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow me on Twitter at Carol Castiel VOA or connect with us on Facebook. Now here's a shout out to a loyal Encounter fan, Mr. Salman Ganiyu from Loran, the capital of Kwara State, Nigeria. If you want to hear your name on the air, please send an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. We'll back to our guests. First to you, Jeffrey Rathke. In the few minutes we have left, looking toward the Putin-Trump summit, what is the purpose of this summit and why now, particularly on the heels of NATO and particularly given that Russia is a major adversary and threat to the NATO alliance, given its aggressive actions in eastern Ukraine, its having occupied Crimea, and of course interfered in so many elections, including our own?
The first thing I think that's important to remember is that the United States has adversaries around the world. We have throughout history. It is not a bad idea for the United States to talk to its adversaries. Indeed, that was one of the things I think that Donald Trump emphasized when he had his meeting with Kim Jong-un in Singapore recently. The real question, though, is has the United States got a diplomatic strategy to make progress on things that affect U.S. interests and the interests of our allies in this meeting? And there, it's a lot harder to tell what the actual American priorities are. You've got several different Russia policies in the United States right now. You've got an extremely tough Russia policy that comes from Congress in the form of legislation, including very tough sanctions on Russia. You have a Russia policy from the defense establishment in the United States, which you can see in this NATO summit declaration that was just agreed earlier this week. And then you've got the president, who talks in warm terms about Vladimir Putin, who talks about all of the benefits that would come from having a good relationship between the United States and Russia. And it's unclear which of these Russia policies is going to be on the table at this meeting in Helsinki. And that, of course, leads to some concern among our allies. Their concern is, will President Trump make a deal over their heads about European security with the president of Russia? That's the fear that Europeans have had for decades throughout the Cold War. And now it is a lot closer to being reality than it ever was under previous presidents. And then will the president make commitments or offer concessions to Vladimir Putin without getting anything meaningful in return? That's, of course, the big question after the Singapore summit, where Kim Jong-un got what he wanted, a place on the world stage, a lessening of pressure on North Korea, and doesn't seem to have given much that can be turned into the verifiable disarmament of North Korea.
That leads me to ask you, Max Bergman, the same question. You know, why now? What did President Putin do to really deserve this summit? We have not seen any movement in eastern Ukraine. He still holds Crimea, upended the post-World War II order. At the same time, as Jeffrey said, we see President Trump speaking in rather complimentary terms with respect to Putin, who is seen by most of our allies, all of our allies, as a major adversary by the United States itself, by the Congress, and many other members of the cabinet. So this does raise questions. What are the concerns of our allies? Are they worried that Mr. Trump, who will be meeting presumably one-on-one, would he make concessions on important topics like Crimea or some kind of suspension of military exercises, which are extremely important to the Baltic states? I mean, what are you worried about?
I don't think it is wrong for the president of the United States to have a summit and to meet with any foreign leader. And I think that is something that oftentimes presidents have been attacked for having summits, whether it was or meetings with diplomats, with Iranian officials, or with North Koreans. So I think it makes a ton of sense to talk to the Russians. We have a lot of shared interests, a lot of things that we need to talk about and to deconflict. But let's be clear. This should be a summit about confrontation, essentially. This should not be a summit about deal making. You know, the old saying that good fences make good neighbors, no boundaries or fences have been applied to the Russians in terms of their activities in intervening in elections in the United States and Western European countries in Ukraine. And so we need to sort of reestablish where our red lines are, where the boundaries are. That's what the summit should be about. It should be about confronting Vladimir Putin. If you had told me in 2015 that American president was going to have a summit with Vladimir Putin after Russia had intervened in our election process, I would have said, oh, great. They're going to use the NATO summit to sort of get with the allies to coordinate. Then the president will go meet with the British to really get on the same page, and he'll sort of show up with this united front against the Russians. But that is not what has happened here. What has happened is instead the president has basically sowed discord with our allies. He's going to come to the meeting with sort of a divided alliance. And he's indicating this need to make all this progress on all these sorts of issues in which it would be the United States making concessions, not the Russians. And let's be clear, the country that needs to change its behavior is Russia. And so my big fear going in, and I think there's multiple reasons to be concerned, I'm afraid that there'll be some sort of recognition of Crimea. That would be a tremendous sort of violation of what U.S. global leadership, a country invading another country, seizing its territory illegally, and then the United States shortly thereafter recognizing that territory, despite Ukraine being opposed to that, would be in many ways unprecedented. I'm also afraid of a potential deal surrounding Syria related to perhaps a trade between recognition in Crimea, movement of Iranian forces that are in Syria further away from Israel. There's all sorts of different combinations of rumors being thrown out about the Middle East, but then also just about NATO exercises, about U.S. participation in NATO exercises. And so I think we may come out of the summit having agreed to a lot of things that are in Russia's interest, but that aren't in the United States. And when it comes to the one-on-one meeting, I find that you would say that's inexplicable, except it's fairly explicable because we know Russia intervened in the 2016 election. We know they intervened on behalf of Trump's candidacy. We know the Trump campaign knew about it. They were informed about it at multiple times. And then we now have a big investigation about whether they aided and abetted that attack on our democracy. So the Russians likely have leverage over the president. And my guess is that's one of the things that the president would want to discuss behind closed doors with only a Russian translator and no American translator. It's really disturbing that that would go forward.
So now Jeffrey gets the last word, and that is the shadow of the Robert Mueller investigation as Mr. Trump and Mr. Putin meet. Special Counsel Robert Mueller is investigating Russian meddling in the U.S. election, and more specifically, if there are any ties between Vladimir Putin, who directed a disinformation campaign in the United States to help Mr. Trump and hurt Hillary Clinton, and the Trump campaign. Jeffrey, why is it important that we keep this in mind?
Well, as you've pointed out, Carol, there was a clear effort by the Russian state to intervene in the U.S. democratic process. Although it was not an armed attack, it is still an attack. And that is the sort of thing that a sovereign state, the world's oldest democracy, the United States, cannot and should not overlook. It has become a partisan issue in the United States, and that is deeply regrettable. But it doesn't change the fundamental facts that that is the backdrop for this meeting. And it's why there is concern about a one-on-one meeting. Where you get into the difficulty is whatever commitments the president makes and whatever he hears from the foreign counterpart, the United States foreign policy machine, they all need to be able to act on the basis of that discussion. They need to be able to convey accurately the essence of what was discussed and decided. And this is a president, frankly, who twists and spins for each waking moment. So there needs to be fidelity between what happens in the meeting and then what the United States is able to follow up on.
We do note that President Trump says he likes Mr. Putin and that he does seem to prefer dealing with dictators than with leaders of democracies who are accountable to their people and to the rule of law. It's a lot more difficult to deal with people like that. On that note, I'm afraid that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guest, Jeffrey Rathke, Senior Fellow and Deputy Director of the Europe Program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, and Max Bergman, Senior Fellow at the Center for American Progress. Gentlemen, thank you so much for your wonderful insights.
Thank you.
Thanks, Carol.
Encounter was produced in Washington. Our engineer was Wojtek Zorniak. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter. on the Voice of America.